do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes in the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. It's, you've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, and a great afternoon to all of you. Thank you for joining us here at the Guy James Show today. We'll be here right up until 5 o'clock Eastern Time. That time doesn't mean a whole lot to a lot of you, does it? You're listening from all over the place. So, yes, we'll be here for a couple of hours. We do hope you will join us today. Give us a call. Always great to hear from you. 866-546-5254 is the number. It's toll-free. It's our nickel. So be sure and call in today and get your 2 cents worth in. We're going to discuss a lot of things across the board today. First of all, I want to say thank you to all the folks out at the Lehigh Acres, Florida Democratic Club last night. Got to go out and meet with those folks and give a little talk there, and sure enjoyed meeting them and met some regular listeners, some devoted listeners, and it was that's always a treat for me. You know, you don't get to meet your listeners when you're on radio. You don't get to see them or anything. Same thing back. I mean, they don't get to meet me either, and so it's just a lot of fun and a great group out there, a fairly new Democratic Club. Coming up on August the 8th, we're going to be emceeing a big fundraiser, the Fort Myers Democrats, for Robert Neal running for Congress against Connie Mack, and we're looking forward to that. That's coming on the 8th of August, so get ready for that. That's going to be a big meal at the Broadway Palm Dinner Club. Always a great place to go. Have great shows, great food there, the whole business. A lot to talk about today. I know yesterday we concentrated almost the entire show on the Israeli Hezbollah Lebanese mess, and I guess it really is part of the Lebanese army base was bombed today. I didn't think the Israelis would do that, but they have hit the Lebanese army base, one of their bases, and so I don't know whether that's going to incite further trouble or not. Don't know. Love to hear your opinions on that today. You know, I haven't had a chance this week. Last night I did, of course, but it was a bunch of Democrats. It's always fun to get out and hear everybody else's opinions. Even our Republican friends like to hear from them. I don't have any neocon friends. I do have some Republican friends, and there is a big difference, you know. I have good, honest differences with a lot of Republicans. We can sit and discuss politics and go away not mad at each other or not thinking each other is crazy, but with the neocons, I always go away thinking they're crazy. So, you know, that's just one of those things. You know, over the past couple of years or so, we've said over and over again that the neocons And I'm leaving the good Republicans out of that, if there is such a thing, you know. But we're leaving that. You know, the neocons, I've said many, many times, and you've heard me say it, they're a bunch of incompetent crazies. And we've complained about it constantly, and we've loudly complained about them and pointed out to everybody listening that they're, you know, that we're being led by a bunch of people who are, you know, it appears anyway, they're not capable of rational thought. People have made decisions that most times are the complete opposite of what should be done for the good of the nation. And I can't quite decide what it is. Is it, I'd love your opinion on this, is it, with these Bush people, is it simply malfeasance? Is it pure greed? Except for Junior Bush, I don't think it's stupidity. Guys like Paul Wolfowitz, and I mean, I know people who know him personally, and say, you know, he's a genius. Guys like Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld, they aren't stupid. So it can't be stupidity, I don't think. I guess it just comes down to greed and a good old raw lust for power, you know. One would think that after the disasters we're involved in over in Afghanistan and Iraq, that they might be hesitant to get involved in more of the same, but they're not backing off at all. And the real hawks amongst the neocons are starting to stir again, and they're wanting some more blood. They want some Iranian blood, and they want it, and they want it now. They think we might as well go to war and get it over with, and we're starting to hear them say it. We're finding that they've had plans to bomb Iran all along. And I think this is really a very dangerous moment for the world. The U.S. is showing over and over again that it's immoral. A lot of our decisions in the past few years have been immoral and incompetent. And this, you know, that's the kind of thing that leads ambitious, crazy, or stupid people to maybe miscalculate and set some terrible events in motion. The neocons have destroyed America's very carefully nurtured mystique that we've enjoyed with the rest of the world by wanting to flex the muscles for the sake of flexing the muscles. And I think that's a huge mistake. This country is much, much, much weaker today because of it. And the world is paying the price. And at some point, I have to imagine that we're going to be paying the price big time. The rest of the world, a lot of the world's paying the price right now, and I have to think that our country, sooner or later, is going to pay an awful price again. There was a very interesting article in a conservative magazine, and you might want to go take a look at this. It's at www.insightmag.com, insightmag.com. And although I agree with some of it, particularly the part about Condi Rice being incompetent, most of it is just plain nuts. The neocon hawks are at it again, and they are deadly serious. Don't count these people out. Just because Iraq and Afghanistan's not going the way that they want it to, don't count them out. They're not going to slither off into their bunker someplace and wait it out. Not a bit. They're we don't call them hawks for nothing. They haven't backed off at all. And in this Insight magazine, it says, and let me quote it, conservative national security allies of President Bush are in revolt against Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, saying that she's incompetent and has reversed the administration's national security and foreign policy agenda. Now, let me tell you something. They're not saying she's incompetent because she's stupid or anything. That's not why they're saying she's incompetent. And they're not saying she's incompetent for not bringing this to a ceasefire over there. Oh, no. These conservatives, who include Newt Gingrich, good old Richard Pearl, and believe me, I know a man who knows Richard Pearl real well. And let me tell you what my friend who has a very powerful organization on K Street in Washington, a good friend, let me tell you what he said about Richard Pearl. One day I'm throwing names at him. And I said, Paul Wolfowitz. He said, well, I know Paul very, very well. I've known him. We went to Foreign Service School together and all this. He said, I know Paul real well. In fact, if I saw him today, we'd shake hands and probably give each other a hug. He said, I don't agree with one bit of his political philosophy, but he's a friend and he's a genius. And then I said, Richard Pearl. And he said, also, perhaps a genius, but the biggest son of a bitch in Washington. That's just what he said, and he said everybody knows it, too. That if you could find anybody in Washington, D.C., outside of Richard Pearl's dog that likes him, he said you'd be doing good. Every time I've seen Richard Pearl, I just bristle because you know what he's been behind a lot of this Iraq war business. But these conservatives and the group of them, Gingrich and Pearl and the leading and former members of the Pentagon and National Security Council, they have all gotten together and urged Bush to transfer Rice out of the State Department back to some sort of an advisory role. They said Ms. Rice, stemming from her lack of understanding of the Middle East, has misled the president on Iran and the Arab-Israeli conflict. You see, she's heading toward possibly wanting to be conciliatory over there, get these folks together. But these guys, they don't want any part of that. And so they don't want her telling Bush that we ought to make peace over there. The article goes on to say the president has yet to understand that people make policy, and not the other way around. A national security policy analyst said, unlike former Secretary of State Colin Powell, Condi is loyal to the president. She is just incompetent on most foreign policy issues. The criticism of Rice has been intense, and it comes from a range of Republican loyalists, including current and former aides in the Defense Department and the Office of Vice President Dick Cheney. And they have warned that Iran has been exploiting Rice's inexperience and incompetence to accelerate its nuclear weapons program, and they expect the collapse of her policy over the next few months. So these guys are just sitting here waiting on this. They're just sitting here waiting and pushing and shoving and tweaking this all they can because they want a war with Iran. And they're not going to be happy unless we bomb the hell out of Iran. It's that simple. It goes on to say, we're sending signals today that no matter how much you provoke us, no matter how viciously, this is Gingrich talking, we're sending signals today that no matter how much you provoke us, no matter how viciously you describe things in public, no matter how many things you're doing with missiles and nuclear weapons, the most you'll get out of us is just talk, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich said, one of the most moral men on this earth. You know, for a long time, I've suspected that Gingrich was really and truly totally immoral. But this really proves it to me. It sounds to me like he'll take any excuse to go to war again. Gingrich said Rice's inexperience and lack of resolve were demonstrated in the aftermath of the North Korean launch of 7 short, medium, and intermediate-range missiles in July. He suggests that Ms. Rice was a key factor in the lack of a firm U.S. response. Gingrich says North Korea firing missiles, you say there will be consequences, there are none. We're in the early stages of World War III. Our bureaucracies are not responding fast enough. We don't have the right attitude. The right attitude? What is the right attitude, Newt? What is that? Have your finger on the button and let them have it? Anytime any nation on earth does something we don't like, we're going to nuke them? Is that it? That's what you're referring to. That's what you're alluding to, isn't it, Gingrich? Gingrich and his friends are crazy. Several of the other critics have urged that Bush provide a high-profile post to James Baker. James Baker, who seems to have his finger in the pie no matter what it is in the world. He's in on it someplace, especially if there's money involved. He was the Secretary of State under Bush Daddy. It said that Baker's determination to confront Iraqi strongman Saddam Hussein, they cited that in 1990, said, you know, he wanted to go after him then. A leading public critic of Rice has been Richard Pearl, a former chairman of the Pentagon's Defense Policy Board and regarded as close to Mr. Cheney. See, I told you he's a son of a bitch, so he's close to Cheney. And Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Mr. Pearl pointed to the effort by the State Department to undermine the Reagan's administration policy toward the Soviet Union in the late 1980s. See, he wanted war with the Soviet Union. He's accused Rice of succumbing to longtime State Department agenda of meaningless agreements meant to appease enemies of the United States. Tell me, Mr. Pearl, what are we supposed to do with enemies of the United States? Are we supposed to just keep poking the stick in the beehive at every one of them? Are we supposed to try and solve problems diplomatically? It seems to me they don't want anything to do with the diplomatic end of it. That article, by the way, went on to say that Condoleezza Rice has moved from the White House to Foggy Bottom, a mere mile or so away. Mr. Pearl wrote in his June 25th op-ed in the Washington Post. It's been distributed throughout conservative and national security circles. I know I got it about, close to a month ago. What matters, he writes, is not that she is further removed from the Oval Office. Rice's influence on the president is undiminished. It is rather that she is now in the midst of and increasingly represents a diplomatic establishment that is driven to accommodate its allies even when such allies counsel the appeasement of their adversaries. These guys just push toward war. They just push toward war every single time. Every single time they push toward it. They don't want anything to do with diplomacy. Diplomacy. Boy, I can't talk today. Pearl's article was said to have reflected the views of many of Mr. Bush's appointments in the White House, Defense Department, and State Department. Pearl. You know, anybody that thinks that since he quit the administration that he hasn't had a tremendous amount of clout there, they're wrong. Through Cheney, with Cheney, they're all crazy. I think they're absolutely nuts. And as you know, I don't think Rice is up to the job of Secretary of State. I was amazed he ever put her in that job in the first place. She just doesn't have what it takes to get the job done. And besides that, she's got some sort of blind loyalty to Junior Bush. The hawks talk like she's some sort of a peacenik. But when you look at her record, think about her record. While in the service of Bush Jr., we've been at war for 5 years. So I don't think she's adverse to war at all, do you? But this isn't really about Condi anyway. Remember Gingrich's speech to the AEI right after the invasion? I was reading what Jim Loeb over on AlderNet wrote. He wrote, it's been barely a week since the U.S. took control of Baghdad, but the Pentagon is already embroiled in a new war, this time with the State Department. Gingrich, who is close to the Pentagon chief, Donald Rumsfeld, aimed the full fury of his rhetorical fire at the State Department, accusing it of actively subverting President George W. Bush's agenda in Iraq and beyond. Remember, this is in 2003. And Loeb went on to write, the last 7 months have involved 6 months of diplomatic failure and 1 month of military success, Gingrich charged, adding, now the State Department is back at work pursuing policies that will clearly throw away all the fruits of hard-won victory. This is in 2003. And they're talking about what a victory we had in Iraq. It really was a stunning attack from someone so closely identified with Rumsfeld. I tell you, it's amazing. They're attacking each other to see who can be more hawkish than the last, really, is what it boils down to. It seems to me that these people just don't get it. They're as wrong can be. They've been proven wrong time after time, and after being knocked down by the truth, they just somehow get back up, dust themselves off, and continue on the same path like some sort of out-of-control robots. And after looking at Bush these last couple of days, and have you noticed him? Have you noticed his demeanor and his face the last few days? You have to think that he has the look of a totally defeated man. I think maybe, just maybe, it's finally sunk into that almost empty head of his that Cheney and the neocon gang have perhaps made him the laughingstock of the entire world. And he might not trust their judgment on Rice right now, so it's going to be interesting if we have a little tug-of-war with them wanting Rice out of there and he hanging on to her. It's obvious that they're hoping for another Pearl Harbor-type event. They had their prayers answered once. Problem is, will they score again on this? I don't know. Wish I knew. They worry me. They really do. They do worry me. Well, we're going to go to a break right now. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No. Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator. It'll take time to restore chaos. Shame on you. Hey, fool me, we can't get fooled again. We can win those war on terror if we're steadfast and strong. It's not going to happen on my watch. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
I do want to remind you, you're listening to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Appreciate you tuning in. We really do. Want to explain our new schedule. We are now, and I need to get the website changed on that. Remind me to get a hold of the web guy. We are now live every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 3 to 5 Eastern Time. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday live on Fridays. We will repeat Thursday's show. And on Monday, how's this going? And on Monday, we'll repeat, I'll put it up on the net anyway. But we're live every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Can't get my act together here today. Lost half my notes, this and that, and the everything's going wrong today. Just having one of those days, you know. It is July the 27th, the summertime. I guess we've entered into dog days. Are you having the nasty heat where you are? This time of year where we live here in Southwest Florida, you can just about rubber stamp it every day. It's going to be around 94. It's going to rain about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon for about a half hour or 15 minutes and go away. And that's just the way it is this time of year. You really could rubber stamp it. Nobody I know around here ever watches the weather. Never. I shouldn't say never, unless there's a hurricane coming. And then everybody can't get enough of the weather, man. But otherwise, they never see the guy. You know, when you live in other parts of the country, you watch the weather every day, see what is going to be here. You absolutely know. Well, enough boring stuff about the weather. I ran across a great article, and I would encourage you to take a look at it if you get a chance. Those of you that get a chance to see the New York Times, I subscribe to the New York Times, and there's a great article in there today by Bob Hebert, and he doesn't mince words as usual. And if you don't mind, I'm going to read this article to you. A lot of you don't subscribe to the Times and won't get a chance to see the Times, but I think Hebert, as usual, has hit the nail right on the head with this article he published today. Imagine a surgeon who is completely clueless, who has no idea what he or she is doing. Imagine a pilot who is equally incompetent. Now imagine a president. The Middle East is in flames. Iraq has become a charnel house, a crucible of horror with no end to the agony in sight. Lebanon is in danger of going down for the count, and the crazies in Iran, empowered by the actions of their enemies, are salivating like vultures. They can't wait to feast on the remains of U.S. policies and tactics spawned by a sophomoric neoconservative fantasy that democracy imposed at gunpoint in Iraq would spread peace and freedom like the flowers of spring throughout the Middle East. Remember that? Remember how you heard that from all the neocons, like from the Wolfowitzes and the Pearls and the Rumsfeld and the Bushes and the Cheneys and all, how we're going to plant democracy there and it's going to spread throughout the whole area. And it's just, you know, there's going to be a rainbow and pretty flowers and everybody's going to, you know, smile forever after. All we had to do was plant that little seed in Iraq there of democracy, and it's just going to grow, and it's just going to be wonderful, boys and girls. It really is. He goes on to say, Bob Hebert does in this article, if a Democratic president had pursued exactly the same policies and achieved exactly the same tragic results as George W. Bush, that president would have been the target of a ferocious drive for impeachment by the GOP. Hell, I think it wouldn't have lasted a month, would it? They would have. Well, can you possibly imagine that right now, that furor there would be from the Republicans if it was Clinton, for example, that was doing this to America rather than Bush? Now, the Democrats have all but been silent. You know that. We have no media presence to speak of. None at all. And therefore, Bush is safe. And of course, they control all the houses in the White House and the Supreme Court and every other damn thing in Washington, D.C. But, you know, there's no huge outcry coming from America about George W. Bush. Here we are faced with the most incompetent administration in our history. A grave danger to America. A domestic policy, economic policy that's been a disaster for every last man and work, you know, man and woman that work for a living. Educational policies that totally suck. Our clean air initiative, our forest initiative. They try to gut the EPA. Everything they've done has just been awful. You can't point to anything. And again, let me. Put that challenge out once again. Give me a couple of good things the Bush administration has done. Just a couple. That's all I'm asking. Just two good things that have been meaningful. You know, I don't mean sign an order that made it Boy Scout Day on the second Thursday of the last. I don't mean anything like that. I mean something that's been actually meaningful for the entire country. Tell me two things that he's done. Just two. You know, I could leave it at one, but maybe somebody come up with something. I don't know what it is. But two, that's not too much to ask, is it? I don't think so. But yet they can't come up with it. You know, you can stymie your Republican friends every time when you start a discussion like that. Got out of my car the other day at the grocery store. And I've got a couple of... I'm not a bumper sticker kind of guy, but I have a couple on there right now. And one of them says, Republic can't. And the other one says, bring her home... Support our troops, bring them home now. Oh, some guy got out of his car next to me and looked at the bumpers, and he says, you call yourself a patriotic American? I mean, couldn't believe this guy saying this to me. I said, yeah. I said, well, those stickers, you know, that's pretty terrible. You saying that about Republicans and, you know, our president, he's our president, and we have to back him. And I, you know, nowadays, my pat answer is, you're one of that 27%, aren't you? And that always catches them off guard. You know, what do you mean, 27%? That 27%, and John Dean mentions in his new book. You know, John Dean's a Republican, and he wrote this new book, Conservatives Without Conscience. And it's a bestseller. And you're one of that 27% that would follow Bush off a cliff. If he told you to march off a cliff, he would. You'd follow him and any leader, because you're just some, you know, this authoritarian thing means a lot to you. Guy just looked at me, didn't say anything else. But, you know, we've got Bush this week. It's been a fair amount of time with the Iraqi Prime Minister, Maliki. And there was a lot to talk about. Almost all of it hideous. And Bob Hebert went on to say, over the past couple of months, Iraqi civilians have been getting blown away at the stunning rate of 4 or 5 an hour. Even Karl Rove had a tough time drawing a smiley face on that picture. And Bush said the other day, obviously the violence in Baghdad is still terrible, and therefore there needs to be more troops. One did not get the sense, listening to this assessment from the commander-in-chief, that things would soon be well in hand. There was instead a disturbing sense of deja vu, a sense of the president at a complete loss, not really knowing what to do. I recalled the image of Mr. Bush sitting in Sarasota, Florida, and don't we all, sitting in a Sarasota, Florida classroom after being informed of the September 11th attacks, and instead of reacting instantly, commandingly, he just sat there for long wasted moments with a bewildered look on his face, holding a second grade story called The Pet Goat. And then there was the famous picture of Mr. Bush on his way back from a month-long vacation, looking out the window of Air Force One as it flew low over the destruction wrought by Hurricane Katrina. "It's devastating," Mr. Bush was quoted as saying. "It's got to be doubly devastating on the ground. No fooling." I'll tell you what's devastating. The monumental and mind-numbing toll of Mr. Bush's war in Iraq, which is being documented in a series of important books, the latest being Thomas Rick's Fiasco. Mr. Ricks gives us more disturbing details about the administration's flawed plan for war and worse, approach to occupation. And near the end of this book, Fiasco, it says, in January 2005, the CIA's internal think tank, the National Intelligence Council, concluded that Iraq had replaced Afghanistan as the training ground for a new generation of jihadist terrorists. The country had become a magnet for international terrorist activity, said the council's chairman, Robert Hutchings. Saddled with one failure after another, the administration seems paralyzed, completely unable to shape the big issues facing the U.S. and the world today. Condoleezza Rice is in charge of the diplomatic effort regarding Lebanon. She's been about as effective at that as the president was in his response to Katrina. But Dr. Rice is still quick with the scary imagery. Her comment, "I have no doubt there are those who wish to strangle a democratic and sovereign Lebanon in its crib," recalls her famous, quote, "we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud" statement. It might help if she spent less time giving us provocative metaphors and more time on the very difficult nuts and bolts of trying to maintain or bring about peace. It may be that a hamstrung Bush administration is a better bet than the same crew being free to act as it pleases. Imagine how much better off we'd have been if Congress had found the wisdom and the courage to prevent the president from invading Iraq. In 2 years and a few months, Americans will vote again for president. I hope the long list of tragic failures by Bush and company prompts the people to take that election more seriously than some in the past. If you were about to be lifted onto an operating table, you'd be more interested in the competence of the surgeon than in his or her personality. Mr. Bush's record reminds us that similarly careful consideration should be given to those who would be president. Bob Hebert in today's New York Times, a great, great article, and he always nails it, just absolutely always nails it right on the head. I think the New York Times, I don't get this where a lot of folks think that this is some sort of a left-wing newspaper. I've noticed, and I bet you have too, in the last year, there's been a lot of people that have excoriated the New York Times for writing articles, and people from the left writing articles that kind of bent toward the right, you know, for a little bit. I don't know. Hey, we're going to go for a little break. We'll be right back.
Hated Blockbuster, Target, McDonald's, Pepsi, IBM, Starbucks, not quite so much. If I'm not boycotting at least three oil companies, I start to feel out of touch. I wouldn't be seen in Nordstrom's or any such. And I hate Walmart. I don't like whips. I don't like
chains. I don't go chopping up my neighbor's brains. Don't really like shopping except at the flea market. I hate Walmart. Now you may wonder, what's all this fuss? If you don't like the train, take the bus. Well, I found religion, and just between us, I hate Walmart. If you didn't hear the story, well, here's how it is. Big companies sell the low cost, drive mom and pop out of business. Pretty soon all over the land, one big square store, identical brand, and that's why I hate Walmart. Used to be you could drive around, stop in on three or four towns, encounter different sights and sounds, different if not unique, different accent, different smell, different things to buy and sell. Now it's all Taco Bell, I hate Walmart. Juice, the bad wine, you drive slow, relax your mind. Never knew what you'd find around the next bend. But now the freeway goes so straight, it go right past the front of the gate. I don't feel human, I feel like freight. I hate Walmart. I like to roam, I like to greet individuals on the street. You always know the one you meet is one of a kind. But more and more, they seem to me reflection of something on TV. When we're all alike, nobody's free. I hate Walmart. I boycott Burger King. I boycott New Gingrich. I boycott everything which I've seen advertised. I used to go out for dinner in a diner. Now they say fast food is fine, but it tastes like it fell out of an airliner. It's enough to make you weep. I don't like board games. I don't like brand names. They make inflated claims. They're full of bleep. Everyone I meet is a high-tech killer. Wants to sell me a digital potato peeler. And I don't like Garrison Keillor, cause he's so white. Turn on my radio dial. I like to hear something new once in a while. But it's the same old crap in a brand new style. It's audio rape. Still I try to pick and choose. I turn the dial, but always lose. They only play the words rock and roll, and once in a while, if you're lucky, maybe one little rhythm and blues, and that's why. We wore beads and belts, made our own clothes in our own way. Now we all wear uniforms at Hard Rock Cafe. We're in a state of sartorial decay, and that's why I hate Walmart. There's a pretty spot to pave it over. Put a clover leaf over a four-leaf clover. Black paint on the white cliffs of Dover. It never fails. Hope you like this song. Thanks a bunch. Could go on, but I gotta go eat lunch. If you didn't like it, I've got a hunch. You work in sales. Don't grow your own, make your own. Be careful what you own. Develop non-shopping to an art. And whatever.
I hate them. I do. You won't catch me walking in a Walmart store. Oh, no, sir. No, you won't. I don't care. I've often wondered, what if it gets to the point where they've driven everybody else out of business where I live? Of course, that's not likely, but what if they did? Would I drive 50 or 75 miles to another store, or would I give up and have to buy some stuff in the Walmart? Those that know me well know I might just take that drive. You want an idea how stubborn I am? I'll just give you a little insight into how stubborn I am. When I was a kid, I would drink Pepsi Cola or I would drink Coca Cola, and it didn't make a whole big difference to me which one I had. I liked them both. They're different, of course, but I liked them both. And I used to love to go to the state fair every year. And 1 year, Pepsi-Cola bought the rights. This is how stubborn I am, and I know this sounds crazy. You talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face. I'll do it. I have done it many times. 1 year, Pepsi-Cola bought the rights to the Ohio State Fair, where no other kind of soda pop could be sold on that fairgrounds other than Pepsi-Cola. And they renamed the arena, and they renamed it. Everything was named Pepsi-Cola, and you know that really pissed me off that they did that. And I haven't drank a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi-Cola product since. Not once. I even go out of my way. You got all these new drinks out. I really do my homework to find out which one is a Pepsi product, because I won't drink a Pepsi product. That's how stubborn I am. All right. Maybe someone's going to hang stupid on that as well. I don't know. But I won't go into Walmart. I will not. And I do wonder if push came to shove, if I'd have to, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, back to business here today, other than talking about crazy things like drinking Pepsi-Cola and so forth. I could give you half a dozen stories like that. I really could. There's a certain restaurant around here I can't go back into anymore because made a few comments to the owner he didn't like, and he invited me not to come back anymore. So I'm stubborn. I am. Are you one of those people, you know, we all gripe and bitch about, I'm getting off on a tangent here, but we bitch and gripe about service nowadays, customer service. Don't you? Isn't that a word that's nearly gone? Like, for example, the phone service I have, I think it's great, but God help you if you got to call customer service. And with so many of these, you know, and you end up talking to somebody in New Delhi, and it just drives me nuts. Customer service in most stores is so very, very bad that when you do get somebody that has great customer service, you just feel like slapping them on the back, say, thank you, buddy. And you don't know how much I appreciate good customer service. But it's a thing of the past almost anymore. Hey, back to topical things going on today. I don't know how many of you heard this, but now the Israelis have bombed a Lebanese army base. Not a good idea, I don't think. And now it's beginning to sound like the Israeli military is prepared to go after the whole deal here. They're bombing a Lebanese army base. This is not Hezbollah. This is a Lebanese army of a democratic country with elected officials, and the Israelis, with our blessing, I guess. I don't know. And also, Reuters reported a little earlier today, an Israeli airstrike on Wednesday hit a truck carrying medical and food supplies donated to Lebanon by the UAE, United Arab Emirates, killing its driver and wounding two others. Here they're sending aid in. The truck was destroyed just a few kilometers from Lebanon's eastern border with Syria in the town of Anjar. Israel's been hitting targets in southern Lebanon, Beirut, and other parts of the country in a war with Hezbollah. Well, I take exception to this. I do take exception to this, and it says in a war with Hezbollah. That's not all they're at war with. They're at war with the Palestinians, you might as well say, and they're most definitely at war with the civilians in Lebanon. And I don't like it. They don't care if I don't like it, but I don't like it, and I think they've been very inhumane about it. The casualties are running about 10 to 1 now on civilian terms, and they say, well, you know, that's war, and war isn't fair. I resent my tax money being spent on those F-16s and those laser-guided bombs and all the other munitions they're using that have been paid for by the United States of American citizens, and then doing this sort of thing with it. I don't like it. Had a little ditty I was going to do here. Oh, how many of you saw that? Those comments? I really need an assistant today. Somebody mentioned it on the internet. I do. It's one of those days where it's helter-skelter around here. How many of you saw? I know a lot of you are aware of the Oklahoma Senator James Imhoff. Knuckle-dragger, I guess you'd call him. Good old Bart Cop. My friend Bart Cop would call him a knuckle-dragger. Bart Cop lives in Oklahoma. And it seems to me that the Oklahomans have got a 1-2 punch as far as stupid goes with their senators. And I picked up on this today. Let me see if I can do this. Let me get a little bit of background music on here. What do we got here? Yeah. Yeah, that's the right kind of background music for this. In a desperate bid to be known as Oklahoma's stupidest senator, Tom Coburn one-ups fellow Okie James Inhofe. Senator Inhofe is the nation's most prominent global warming denier. He famously declared that global warming is the greatest hoax ever perpetuated on the American people. Now he's taken the argument a step further. In an interview with Tulsa World, Inhofe compares people who believe global warming was a problem to Nazis. In an interview, he heaped criticism on what he saw as the strategy used by those on the other side of the debate and offered a historical comparison. It kind of reminds me, I could use the Third Reich, the big lie, Inhofe said. Inhofe added that every claim in an Inconvenient Truth has been refuted scientifically. He also admitted he'd never seen the movie. But then fellow Oklahoma Senator Coburn steps in with this famous quote, "Condoms and teenagers work about 50% of the time if you count all the studies up." Now, there's a brilliant one for you. And his other great quote lately has been, abstinence is the best way to prevent teenage pregnancy, responded Senator Tom Coburn, Republican of Oklahoma. What is in the water in Oklahoma is what I want to know. What is it out there that they elect two numbskulls like Coburn and Inhofe? Huh? What is it? I know a couple of Okies, and they're not stupid like that. How could those boys get elected? I don't know. Well, so much for the banjos, but I thought that music was appropriate to when he talked about Inhofe, and very appropriate. 866-546-5254. Where is everybody today? 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. I talked a little bit last night when I talked to this group of Democrats who went out to at the Lehigh Acres, Florida. Talked to them about Democrats. And I don't know. I'm a little bit upset with the party right now. A little bit. Actually, more than a little bit. Sometimes I have to wonder if all the strategists for the Democrats aren't smoking crack all day long. And I know some of you wonder the same thing. You hear what they're advising our candidates to do, and you have to scratch your head and wonder if they're not passed around one of those famous Cheech and Chong doobies the size of a summer sausage, I suppose. Listen to this. Liz Sidoti, Associated Press writer for Salon Magazine, wrote today, Democrats plan to press for a minimum wage increase and, quote, tough, smart national security in their final push to wrest power from the Republicans in November elections. House and Senate Democrats will hold a joint meeting on Thursday to discuss events planned for the 100 days leading up to midterm congressional election and lay out their party agenda called A New Direction for America. It's a compilation of positions the party has staked out over the past few months on income, national security, energy, education, healthcare, and retirement accounts. We're going across the country to make our case, Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid of Nevada said. We're going to reject the divisive politics of the last 6 years and unite America behind an agenda that works for all. Let me repeat a little bit of that. Democrats plan to press for a minimum wage increase and tough, smart national security in their final push to wrest power from the Republicans in the November election. Are they serious? That's what they're going to base their campaign on. That's going to be the strategy. The minimum wage and tough national security. You know, I hate to be the one to mention it, but didn't they leave a couple of very important things out? A couple of things that need to be at the very top of that list? Any mention of the Iraq war there? Any mention of the entire bottom of the economy falling out from under the working guys in this country? Not a word. You mark my word, when it comes to some of this stuff, the Republicans will crucify the Democrats on those issues if they avoid them. And that's what they're doing. They're avoiding the tough stuff already. And I found this today. Already the Republicans have fired a volley back at the Democrats on their plans, and it is a knife in the heart. Danny Diaz, a Republican National Committee spokesman, said, "It's both ironic and amusing that Democrats believe they're making a final argument to the American people while being incapable of deciding how much to raise taxes on working families or how quickly to retreat from Iraq." Here we go. We've allowed them to frame the issues for the past 10 or 20 years, or so, and we're leaving the door wide open for them to do it again. It's absolutely unbelievable. It's amazing to me that the Democrats could keep coming up with these so-called experts, advisors, strategists, whatever you want to call them, pay them big bucks. And this is what we got. How could they not talk about the Iraq War? It's simple why they can't, really. It's because they don't have a plan. That's why. You hear one or two of the Democrats say, "Yeah, I've got a plan to get out of Iraq." But where's the party at on this? Where's the party, a cohesive plan to get out of Iraq? We don't have one. They think that they can go into this important election season without a plan on this war and win without one. You know, they might be right. This time they might be right. They might be right that they can win this election over what everybody considers a totally crippled Republican Party. But if they take office without a defined plan and they don't get the problem taken care of, guess who's going to be waiting in the wings to take Congress back from them and keep it the next time? Here we are trying to convince America that the Democrats are better for the country than the Republicans, and they don't have a hint of a plan to stop the killing of the American soldiers and the innocent Iraqis. We don't have a plan to show America that the fat cats are reaping all of the benefits of the tax system, and we're supposed to be the alternative to the Republican incompetence. What fools the Democrats are when it comes to this kind of thing. You know, if by some miracle we actually do win one or both of the houses of Congress in November, it's only going to be because the public couldn't any longer stomach the incompetence of the Bush administration. It's the old lesser of two evils deal. And when the Democrats' terms are up, the Republicans, they'll come right back into power because they'll have a plan. Might not be a good one, but they'll have a plan, and they'll tell everybody about it. It might be a disaster, but they'll have one, and they'll convince the American public that they're our saviors. You know, Bush has already said in so many words he's going to leave the Iraq problem for the next guy, and I've said it before, and this is going to be akin to the captain of the Titanic handing the wheel over to the next ranking officer after he hit the iceberg and say, "Good luck, pal." Are the Democratic advisors really foolish enough to think that the Republicans aren't poised to blame the Democrats for anything and everything that goes wrong in the next couple of years if they take power? Do they really think they can take power and not have a plan? Folks, the problems the Republican neocons have caused these past 6 years are not going to go away overnight. It's going to take many years to fix the damage that's been done, both domestically and on foreign policy. These Bush cons have devastated America, and it's not going to be easy to get things right again. And that's all the more reason to identify the problems and come up with a concrete plan to fix them and then implement those plans when you get in office. Otherwise, it's going to be a one term and done for many of the Democrats that are elected this time around. We've seen Bush and his crew show disdain for reality during these past 6 years. The Democrats won't be able to get away with that. They won't be able to get away with ignoring the herd of elephants in the room. And some of the problems we're facing might as well be irreversible. They may well be irreversible, and guess who's going to get blamed for that? The Democrats need to step up to the plate and take some swings instead of trying to get a free ride to first base. And you know I'm right about these Democratic advisors. Look at what they did for Al Gore and John Kerry. Couldn't any one of them have given... You know, I know every doggone one of you could have given them better advice on how to present themselves and frame the issues. Of course you could have. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm absolutely sure I'm not. We've got a lot of good people in the party, and we know that, but too damn bad some of them aren't smart enough to get some strategists to know what ends up. I'm really kind of disgusted with them right now. Hey, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Say good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hi, doing? Bill. How are you?
Good. Listen, I'm kind of off subject today. I hope you don't mind.
All right.
I wanted to ask you what size jacket you wear.
I don't honestly know.
Well, you think maybe a 46?
Maybe a 48.
Maybe a 48. You're about my size then.
Yeah.
Because I got mine today.
It's the soldiers. You got yours today.
I got mine today.
All right.
I figure we're living in an asylum, and the crazy people are running, and I got fitted for mine today. So I thought maybe I could talk you in. I'm not making anything off of them. So I figure you're going to need one sooner or later.
Yeah, gee. I'm behind on things here. Didn't you send me a song the other night?
Yeah, sure did.
And you know, I downloaded that onto my playlist here, and I got ready to play it yesterday afternoon. I hit the button, and nothing happened, and that's my fault. I did something wrong. I don't know what, but anyway, we'll get that on.
Yeah. Like I said the other day, I said Bush, I think he's acting like Hitler. I think that was too much off the wall, but he is a madman, and I believe, 70%, 80% of the people that are around him, there's no other advice that he gets that says, well, hey, we got to look at this. You can't go this way. You can't go that way.
They get rid of everybody like that. They just get them out. You know, Cheney, I think you got to go through Cheney to get through him, and if anybody comes up and says anything against, you know, what that cabal wants to do, they dump them.
I don't understand it. I mean, I think what kind of show it was I watched, it was about JFK and when they had a Cuban Missile Crisis was going on, and there was that one general who wanted to take and invade Cuba or something, and they already had the missiles there. All they had to do was let them loose.
Somebody good with your history, let us know. Maybe that was Curtis LeMay. I'm not sure.
I believe you're right. I believe you're right. There you go. Spot on again, guy.
Strategic Air Command, Commander.
He really had the press to keep from doing that. And they finally went out, and without any people losing their lives or anything, we got those missiles out of Cuba. Thank God on that, and that was a big thing in my day.
Bill? That's a big thing in anybody's day. That was, to me, and people might think it's melodramatic to say so, but I think in the entire history of the known world that was the pivotal moment right there. Had there been a group in office like these boys we got right now, you and I would not be talking right now. Nobody would.
I was delivering a Columbus Dispatch, and that was all over the front papers for, a good week, 10 days. And like I told you, the first thing I did when I was delivering papers is I'd read through that front page and find out what's going on. And, it's a whole different deal. There's no nothing like that goes on anymore then, I guess, huh?
I don't think so. Who would be the person in this White House to hold back the hawks? You know, there were people, like you said, and I believe it was LeMay, that probably wanted to go after the Russians. But
Curtis LeMay.
Curtis LeMay. I think cooler heads prevailed, but who would hold him back in this administration? I don't know.
Maybe that's, why I'm, I guess you'd say left wing, a lefty or whatever you want to call. But it's because I took an interest in a world events, back in the days when I was just a kid. And, cared what was going on or was interested in what was going on. I don't think half the people care anymore. I think they're just cheerleaders.
Yeah.
And people don't care. They got too much to do, and everything gets just flies by, goes underneath the table, and there's just too many things to do, too much to watch on TV. We didn't have that back then.
Yeah, what's the old saying? If you don't study history, if you don't pay attention to history, you're doomed to repeat it. Something like that. Yeah. And you know, I just know, you just know if something terrible came up right now, some sort of Armageddon thing, there'd be Cheney'd be right there demanding that we nuke the hell out of somebody. I mean, that's just the way it would be. And
what do you think's going to happen, seriously, Guy, with Randall? You believe this is the October surprise?
I cannot. I don't have
enough time left yet.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. I can't let myself think that they're that crazy. Everything within me, my brain tells me that they probably are that crazy to go to war with Iran, but I just can't believe it. There's something within me saying, no, you're wrong. They wouldn't dare. But who would have thought they would have done what they've done in Iraq? I mean, who would have thought that? Hey, Bill, you're welcome to hang on. I've got to go to the news at the top of the hour.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind talking to you for a few minutes today, Guy.
Hang on. We'll find out where the heck this news thing is here. We'll be back in just a minute or two. Don't go away.
This is the Quality News Network. Israel and Hezbollah are exchanging heavy fire around three Lebanese border towns today. In addition, Israeli airstrikes have reportedly hit a Lebanese army base and a relay station belonging to Lebanese state radio north of Beirut. Hezbollah also continues to fire rockets into northern Israel, hitting a chemical plant in Kiryat Shemona. Meanwhile, Israel's justice minister says that the fact that international talks in Rome broke up yesterday with no agreement on a ceasefire essentially gives Israel a green light to continue its offensive in southern Lebanon. But the Israeli cabinet today voted not to expand that offensive, saying it is already accomplishing its goals there. In Baghdad, a car bomb followed by mortar shells and rockets in a mostly Shiite shopping district has killed as many as 31 and wounded 150. The trial of Saddam Hussein and seven others is about to end. Today was the final day of closing arguments. The judge is expected to deliver his verdict in mid-October. A new New York Times CBS poll shows Americans overwhelmingly pessimistic about the prospects for peace in the Middle East. The poll also shows that 60% of those asked do not believe President Bush has the respect of other world leaders. Another poll, this one by NBC and the Wall Street Journal, shows only 27% think this country is heading in the right direction, and 58% say they now are less confident of success in Iraq. 16 people, including at least two American civilians, have been killed in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. Authorities say it appears to have been accidental. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is meeting with representatives of seven other countries in Malaysia at the annual meeting of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. On the agenda, discussions about North Korea's nuclear and missile programs. President Bush has signed the Adam Walsh Child Protection and Safety Act today, creating a national sex offender registry. It is named for the 6-year-old, a Florida boy who disappeared and was murdered 25 years ago. President also signing into law a 25-year extension of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. A congressional investigation finds extensive waste and misspending at the Department of Homeland Security. The Washington Post reporting that the investigation found problems with the dependence on no-bid contracts and inadequate oversight, leading to significant overcharges or mismanagement. Some relief for California today from a 12-day heat wave, though temperatures will still be in triple digits in the state's Central Valley. 81 people have died from the heat so far. And the World Health Organization says that as many as 60,000 people die each year from the effects of the sun, mostly from malignant skin cancer. Business news is coming up.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The Commerce Department says factory orders for durable goods rose more than 3% in June, the fastest pace in 3 months. Sales of new homes fell 3% in June to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.13 million. British record company EMI Group has announced it is abandoning its plans to merge with Warner Music Group. If the deal had been completed, it would have created the world's second largest music company after Universal. XM Satellite Radio Holdings reporting a wider loss for its second quarter and has again lowered its estimates for full-year subscription counts. ExxonMobil profit jumped 36% to more than $10 billion in the second quarter. That's the second highest quarterly profit ever recorded for a publicly traded U.S. company. Earnings were $99 billion. And Shell reports a 30% increase in its profits. Earnings were $83 billion. Chicago now has an ordinance requiring big box retailers like Walmart to pay a living wage of at least $10 an hour plus $3 in fringe benefits by the year 2010. Minimum wage in Illinois is $6.50 an hour. The federal minimum and that of 25 states is $5.15 an hour. Gold is trading this hour at $644 an ounce. Silver at $11.48 an ounce. And light sweet crude oil is at $74.65 a barrel. That's up by 71 cents a barrel from yesterday's close. Trading is mixed on Wall Street. The Dow Industrial is up 1. NASDAQ this hour is down 16. And the S&P 500 is lower by 4. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed. We are back. My, oh my, oh my. We're getting a storm here where I live. So don't be all that surprised if if we go away for a minute or two. It's really putting it down outside right now, and the thunder and lightning, you know, this is kind of like the lightning capital of the world here. It's just amazing. I was brought up in the north, you know, and the Midwest, Ohio specifically, and yes, we had thunder and lightning storms, but nothing like these ones that roll in off the Gulf of Mexico. Man, oh man, the thunder just reverberates off the waters like a huge kettle drum out there. It's just amazing, and the lightning, oh my. Fantastic light show going on. So it's almost like nighttime. It makes everybody a little anxious. Hey, back to the phone. Hey, Bill, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Never a dull moment, huh, Guy?
No, that's for sure. I tell you, we get some wild weather around here in these thunder and lightning storms, but I guess we don't need any more rain right now. We've got enough water laying around here to last for quite a long time, but we're going to get it anyway.
Say, Guy, just how in the hell do you think our oil did get underneath their sand?
Let me
ask you a question, Guy, because that was a little rhetorical. Do you think, Guy, that if we had the world's, just absolutely the world's largest amount of oil underneath our ground, whether we'd give a hoot with anything that's going on over there?
Not a bit. Not one bit. All this stuff, all this phony baloney about wanting to start democracy in the Middle East and to free the people and all, never would have happened.
I mean, would there be anything at all on the TV about what Iran or Iraq?
Nothing. Nothing
unless
at all.
There may be some camel races going on or some kind of big sporting event or something? I mean, you wouldn't hear a thing about this.
No. No, certainly not. You know, someday we're going to have to do a show on it, kind of like a little history history show here about the Middle East, but you know, I recently
interesting.
I recently completed a Middle East studies course, and the history of the Middle East with our country, we didn't want anything to do with the Middle East. I mean, Britain and France were messing around over in the Middle East for a long time before we were. And by the time, you know, the First World War was over, when the first, first anything we had to do with them, it was Woodrow Wilson. And then only because of some missionaries that were over there in Turkey and so forth, that's how America got a little bit involved. But really, America just stayed completely away from it. We had plenty of oil here, and of course we didn't. We weren't using a lot of oil yet. But
what was that that guy's name that was on the cover of Time magazine in the '50s?
Moshe Dayan. Yeah, General Moshe.
Moshe Dayan. But oh. I'm thinking of the guy from Iran that came over here, and he met with somebody. He and then he got overthrown.
Oh. Good question.
I know you know who I'm talking about.
Good question. Before the Shah?
Yes. He came. He's an Iranian, a popular leader over there, and we sent somebody from Roosevelt's nephew or somebody over there to help overthrow him.
Well, yeah. I mean, we definitely we threw the Shah's father out. And installed him later on. You know, that's about the time we started deciding. Of course, that had a lot to do with Russia as well. We had a gateway to Russia. The only reason we ever got in Iran in the first place was to use it as a passageway to ship arms up to Russia during the Second World War, and we got pretty firmly entrenched in there, you know, the rest is history. But
I guess the guy we should have seen all this coming with that oil embargo.
Yeah.
Back in the '70s.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, but we're Americans, and we stuck our heads in the sand, and as we are wont to do, and thought it would get better. You know, it's that like that old saying I like to pass on. I know everybody's heard me say it a dozen times. It's like getting in the refrigerator, getting out a carton of milk, taking a drink of it, and it's sour, and you put it back in, and you think, well, maybe it'll get better later.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. It's, I don't know, we just don't have, I was talking to my wife last night, and I said, I married a German girl when I was in the Army, and, you know, the family took me in and said, oh, it's an American boy, you know, he's a good kid and everything. I said to her, I don't know so much if there was an American over there now, they'd be saying, oh, yeah, that's nice. My daughter will go over there and live in America. I don't know if I want my daughter hooked up with. And I believe, honest to God, believe that.
I think you're right. You know, the best people to talk to about that, most definitely, I find out, we have so many visitors here from around the world.
Oh, you got a ton of them.
But the best people, if you want to get a true sense of what's going on, talk to the Swiss. The Swiss, you know, they are what they're said to be. They are so neutral on things. They are so neutral. But right now,
really intelligent people.
Oh yeah, and but right now they are not neutral on America. I can tell you, the last half dozen or so of them I've talked to, they've got no use for George Bush. They're deathly afraid of him. And, you know, you hear that coming out of the mouth of a Swiss person, an educated Swiss person, you go, whoa.
You don't have to go looking for those people in Florida. They're so easy to find. You know, you can hear, you know, of course, in their speech and that. But even, you know, the few times I've been down to Florida, I've ran into different people from in Europe. You know, just like if you're meeting somebody from the next county over.
Oh, yeah. We've got a huge German settlement around here. Big, big German presence. Many, many, many. And they enjoy coming here because their money goes so far here right now.
Got a great German restaurant there in Naples. Trying to think what the name of it was.
I don't know.
It's a big place. Been there. But... Listen, I'll let you go.
Hey, Bill, thanks for calling, and I'll get that song out and get it copied down the right way.
I'll get back to you on that jacket, guy, if you're interested.
Did they come in any other colors besides white?
No, just the... I'm sorry, guy, but just the sort of
I'm just not sure about those strings on the sleeves either. I don't know.
You take care, guy.
Thanks for your call.
It was great talking to you today, buddy.
Bye now. Let's go over to the other line here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
This is Alice.
Hi, Alice.
County.
Hi.
I know all about your weather, lightning and thunder.
Yeah, we're
born in Fargo, North Dakota.
Ah. Fargo. Been there.
Yeah, that, you know, that's rough living.
Very rough living. Cold.
Well, anyway, Guy, it's hard for me to believe the Democrats don't see how bad it is for us to be in Iraq. All should be saying our plan is to get out of Iraq as fast as possible. Why do they think we are there?
It ought to be number one. Ought to be number one on the list.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know whether it's they can't come up with a good plan. I just wish I knew. I wish I knew. They just, I'll tell you, I don't think the Democrats are going to get away with ignoring this. I really don't.
Well, they better get busy, do something.
They sure need to. That's for certain. Thanks for your call, Alice.
Bye.
Good to hear from you.
Good work.
Yeah. Bye-bye. I just don't think they are taking it seriously. I had some... what did I do around here? Oh, here we go. Especially when you consider this, that the Democrats aren't making a big deal out of the war. Here's the newest New York Times poll. Do you think the United States should or shouldn't set a timetable for withdrawal from Iraq? Should 56%, should not 40%. What more clear... How much more clear can you be than that? 56 to 40, Americans say we should set a timeline to get out of Iraq. And the next question, do you think it is worth the loss of life and other costs for the United States to remain in Iraq until there's a stable democracy there, or is it not worth the loss of life and other costs, or are you unsure? Worth it, 25%. Not worth it, 42%. And here are the people I wonder about, unsure, 32%. 32% of the American people are not sure if we ought to get out of Iraq or not. Man, you got to wonder about that. How do you think the war with Iraq is affecting the United States image in the world? Is the war making the U.S. image in the world better, making it worse, or is the war having no effect on the U.S. image in the world? Better, 10%. Worse, 72% of the American people think our image has gone down the tubes over this Iraq war. Man. Do you think the U.S. presence in Iraq is leading to greater stability in the Middle East? Less stability, or won't it have any effect? Greater, 25%, less, 41%, and 25% of the people say it will have no effect. Well, I can't really buy that 25% of the people think that there won't be any effect. We're seeing it already. We're seeing a huge effect already. I don't know how they're coming up with that. But so, you know, there you have the numbers. I mean, it's abundantly clear that the Democrats could get all over this issue of the war. And I don't mean for political reasons. Forget the political reasons. They need to do it to save America, to save our place in the world, to try and get our reputation back again from these awful, you know, these awful people that have destroyed it. I'm afraid I'm just not understanding the Democrats on that at all. Is it that hard to come up with a plan? Is it? I don't know. There's, of course, I had a note handed to me there a while ago about, okay. I wonder why today that the news is all calmed down pretty much as Are the news services finally getting tired of the Israeli Lebanese deal? Are they tired of it? They want to move on to something else. The coverage that I've seen today has dropped off from what it's been the past few days. And now are they looking for another big story? Is that it? I don't know. I wish I knew the answer to that. It just doesn't seem like they're banging away at it like they were just about 3 or 4 days ago. That's all it was all day long, and that they'd forgotten that Iraq would even existed. But you know, some of these attacks that the Israelis are doing in Lebanon, I tell you, a lot of my friends, and we talked about this last night, some friends I had a chance to meet with, people are ashamed of America right now and the way we're acting with this kind of destruction and slaughter and malicious violence is being carried out and pretty much on behalf of or with support from the U.S. government. And I really think people who are informed, real informed Americans that have the facts behind them or have a conscience are really kind of bewildered and heartbroken over this whole thing. And I know I am. It does bother me tremendously. But sadly, most Americans are not well informed, regardless of whether or not they think they are. All of the American news agencies are, in my opinion, willfully regurgitating only what the U.S. and the Israeli governments want the American public to know over there, which is that Hezbollah and Lebanon and Palestine and Hamas are the aggressors, killing Israeli civilians and causing a lot of hardship, and that is Israel is acting in self-defense, and Israel is targeting only Hezbollah and Hamas fighters, and they're only a small amount or minimal damage to others, which is a bunch of crap. This news story, this response by the Israelis has been totally disproportionate, just totally disproportionate. You know, most of the news stories in America describe the fighting as Hezbollah and Israel kind of like trading attacks, implying that Hezbollah is attacking Israel and Israel is attacking Hezbollah. CNN's main story on the subject showed us a story yesterday how life in an Israeli bomb shelter is so hard for the children. And it really was a heartbreaking account of the suffering on the Israeli side of the conflict. But there wasn't any mention made of the Lebanese or the Palestinian children. None of them. There was no mention of that. But those kids being murdered by the hundreds by the IDF. And why? I don't know. You tell me. Why when the civilian death toll is nearly 400 to 40? Why would the news not be fair about it? I just don't think they are right now. And you heard me talk about it. We're way over the top. Just way over the top. The response to this is. I hate to... hate to go on about it, but let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello, Guy. This is your conservative friend from Texas. How are you?
Hi.
Well, I know that we obviously are going to disagree with what's going on over there. I guess from a conservative viewpoint or whatever you want to call it, I'm sure you're going to call me a limbot or whatever, and that's okay. I mean, we come from, I guess, just different constructs of the world. I don't see why it's a problem for Israel to defend themselves. And I know I keep hearing this proportionality issue, I guess, boil over in quite a few of the shows, whether it be on Limbaugh or whether it be on your show or any other show. I keep hearing that. And I don't think proportionality issue is a valid one. And the reason I say that is because, it's my view, they have a right to defend themselves. You've got so many people there right around them, all of their neighbors, who want them gone, not just to live in peace. They want them eradicated. They want them gone from the whole earth. Just gone. And that's the mentality that they're fighting against.
All right. Stop right there before we go on.
Okay, that's fine.
Don't they want the Palestinians gone?
They have... tried negotiate a peaceful settlement with the people.
Oh, come on now.
They don't want that.
Come on now. Have they been fair to the Palestinians? Can you honestly say they've been fair to the Palestinians?
I think they have.
How would you like to be walled off over in Gaza there with a big fence around and not be allowed to come out only and have curfews put on you and not be allowed to go to your work for days at a time unless they called off the curfew?
Well, if their own recognized government won't do what is necessary to keep them from putting on vests and going across the border there to blow themselves up and Israel people too, then what is Israel supposed to do?
Maybe they can't control that any more than we can control the Tim McVeighs in this country.
You have a point there as far as we have homegrown terrorists here. Tim McVeigh is a perfect example. But blowing people up and is not the solution. But I don't know how you negotiate whether you want to call it a ceasefire, the new term, saying ceasefire, whatever you want to call it. I don't know how you negotiate something that's going to stick with people who want to kill you. I don't understand how you do that. I mean, I keep hearing of everybody wants to talk, but it seems like every time that they do enter into some kind of a ceasefire agreement, that all that really does is allow the people who are getting their butt hit to rearm and to come back with something even stronger next time. So, I mean, I don't know what the solution is. I think the only way that it's going to resolve itself is one side or the other is going to have to win. It's going to have to defeat their enemy, whether it be Hezbollah defeating Israel or Israel defeating them. And I think that's when you're going to find a peaceful settlement. I mean, we didn't, whenever we went in against Japan, we went in and kicked their booties, and that's whenever we negotiated, and once they surrendered, said, okay, we give. And it's last. I think Israel, given the opportunity to enter into a real agreement, will keep their word. After they
haven't kept their word. They haven't kept it. Let's talk about the UN resolutions they've violated over the years. Right now, I think the number is 72 UN violations.
Look at Egypt and Jordan.
What about them?
Those are perfect examples when they have entered into an agreement, and Jordan has kept their word, and so have the Israelis. Egypt has kept their word.
The Israelis have not kept their word. They have violated 72. I'm pretty sure the number is 72 UN resolutions against them. They never even had the decency to give the map of the landmines to the Lebanese government. Not Hezbollah, but the Lebanese government that the UN ordered them to do after they went out of there.
Maybe that's the case. I'm not going to argue over something that I don't know. One way or the
other. It is the case. So I mean, they don't necessarily keep their word either, and they've been waiting for something to, you know, okay. They were waiting to pounce here.
But can you acknowledge the example of Jordan and Egypt with Israel? They went to war with both of those countries, and they have entered into agreements with those two countries. And since that time, there has not been any conflict between those two countries.
Why do you suppose that is?
I would say because both sides kept their word. Jordan is not a threat to Israel because they recognize their right to exist. So has Egypt. And you know, some of these other places, Syria and the others, they can talk the language, but you know, they keep funneling things through. And I'm not saying that Israel is totally innocent in the thing, because they are in complete defensive mode and they may overreact to something. But that's what happens. I mean, it's no different than a child. You know, if they're used to getting yelled at, they learn to tune you out, and then it takes more and more and more from, you know, one party to get them to.
All right, Mike. What makes you think? You know, we had a UN vote on this, and it came out to 189-3 to at least get down to a ceasefire. And I'd like to think that the representatives to the UN from all the nations of the world are not complete idiots. What makes you think that 189 nations in this world are wrong in this?
Well, I guess you have to look at it and see.
No, I mean, do you honestly think that 189 nations in this world are wrong and us and Israel and Great Britain.
Everybody wants a ceasefire. I mean, the U.S. wants a ceasefire, too.
They didn't vote for one.
No, you're right. They certainly did not. And, you know, like I said before, you can't really negotiate a ceasefire with somebody who wants to eradicate the other person. It's still in the Hezbollah or the Hamas. I don't remember which one. You know, the charters, they can talk a good game about, well, we just want to live in peace with Israel, but yet they have to, when they're talking their own language to their own people, it's entirely a different matter.
The only reason Hezbollah exists today is because of the brutality of Israel toward the Lebanon back in the 80s. That's the only reason.
That may be. That may be their reasoning.
Overkill. It's overkill.
Well, proportionality, I think, is... Actually, I think this is the way we should have been fighting in Iraq, is it really Israel...
We should not be fighting in Iraq.
Well, I disagree.
Let's go into that. How well is this working out in Iraq so far, this peace that we've planted over there, this democracy? How well is it working out?
I think it's going better than they actually...
Oh, my God, Mike, it's gone 100 times worse than we're hearing.
Well, I don't see it that way.
I hear from people there... Your very own government knows damn well that it's going down the drain. Bush, and you know, Bush would rather have died than made that announcement yesterday that they had to send 30,000 more troops into Baghdad.
Well,
he had to just eat it on that. I mean, that had to be a...
I guess what I don't understand, too, is, you know, we say that he's made mistakes and that we needed more troops, but then when he sends more troops, then we get on him about that.
I'm not getting on... Now, it's good money after bad now. If he'd have taken General Shinshenki's reasoning in the first place and other generals in the Pentagon, actual military people, instead of Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, and let them do what they wanted to do, they probably would have got the job done. Not that I think it should have been done, but they probably would have gotten the job done. And now he looks like you know, it could go on and on and on about this. I put a challenge out the other day, and I said it again today. Name me two good things that that Bush has done for all the people of the United States, too.
Well, I think what he's doing in the Middle East
is much
farther looking, forward looking.
Do you know how that sounds to the rank and file of the American people?
Well, I mean,
it's a complete disaster.
It's the same. I guess it's the same viewpoint that we had when the country was first founded, when only a third of the people wanted to form a country. You know, I mean, that's the way it was when we founded the country. You know, so sometimes minorities.
Why was it we went into Iraq? Can you remind me? No. Can you remind me what? Huh?
You can demagogue it and say that.
No, I'm not demagoguing it. Tell me the reason that they told us that we went into Iraq. Tell me the reason.
To fight terrorism.
No. That's not the reason they said we were going into Iraq. What was the reason, Mike?
They were part of the act.
Mike, what was the reason they said we were going in? The reason.
You want me to say WMDs, but that's not.
That is it. And if you don't recognize the fact that these people that you backed, the Bush administration, said that was the specific reason we went into Iraq, if you don't recognize that fact, then you're living in la-la land, because Bush, Cheney, all of them admitted that.
Nah, they didn't.
Mike, how can I talk to you if you won't even admit that Bush... What he admitted they went in there for the WMDs. Do you remember Condoleezza Rice saying we've something so this doesn't end up mushroom cloud? Do you remember?
And I do agree with that, but it wasn't because Iraq.
It was stated by the Bush administration. It was stated in front of the UN by Colin Powell that the very reason that we went... How can you forget Colin Powell at the United Nations that we were going into Iraq because of the threat of the WMDs? Don't try and spin it.
Anything that I say, you're going to recognize.
No, you're not recognizing the fact. Do you remember or don't you remember? This is so damn frustrating. Do you not remember Colin Powell and that presentation he gave to the United Nations?
That was part of the reason we...
Part of it. It was all of it.
No, Then how can you say that when you say it was for oil?
It was all of the reason that they gave. It wasn't the actual reason. It was the reason they lied and gave in order to get the American public to back them. They used fear-mongering to get the American public to back. Yes, let's go in and get those WM, those dirty bastards. They're gonna kill us all.
I think you're going to find that the WMDs actually are there.
Oh, Mike. You know what you are? You're one of those 27% that John Dean's talking about. You're one of that 27% that if Bush told you to march over the cliff, you'd do it. It wouldn't make a difference if it was George Bush or John Smith, whoever the president was, you'd do whatever the hell they said, right or wrong.
Well, but that's not true, because I totally disagree with what the president's doing on immigration, which is nothing. They're not doing a damn thing.
Don't change the subject. Why did this administration? Now you're going to have to answer this honestly. Why did the administration say we went into Iraq?
We went in there for terrorism.
Nope. You're not being honest. You're not being honest. I won't carry on this conversation unless you're honest. You remember full well Colin Powell going in and giving that presentation to get the rest.
I do remember.
And what was the reason he gave?
And he talked about chemical weapons. He also talked about terrorists getting their hands on some of those things. And that was one of the reasons that we went.
That was not one of the reasons. That was the reason. The yellow cake argument. That was the reason. And then they changed it to fighting terrorism. And then they changed it to liberating the Iraqi people. Do you honestly think that George W. Bush gives a damn about the people in Iraq?
I do.
Oh, my God.
One of the things that I disagree with the way that we have fought in Iraq is we fought it in a politically correct way.
You can talk all you want to about fighting in Iraq, because that's a moot point. We never should have been fighting there in the first place.
Okay, accepting that fact. I'm going to accept what you say is true, but we are there, and if we're going to be there, we needed to do the job and get it done right.
What job are you referring to?
Taking out the terrorists that are there.
Oh, please. We're not fighting terrorists in Iraq.
Well,
you know that better than I do. You know that as well as I do. We're not fighting terrorists in Iraq. Sure, there are some terrorists in Iraq that came in.
Bob Al-Zarqawi would disagree with that if he were here to tell you.
Who?
Zarqawi, I think he would disagree with
me. Oh, he had his band of people in Iraq. There's no question that there's some there now. But the lion's share of the people we're fighting are insurgents that are Iraqi people. They're not terrorists that we're after.
They're not Iraqis. They're not. I don't think they're Iraqis at all.
Where do you hear this stuff?
They may be from other countries.
Where do you hear these things? Where do you get your news?
The same places you get them.
I don't think so.
You know, I mean, I hear it on all the different shows, and I know that you're a smart guy, and you have your sources, and you develop your opinions from all the different things that you read, and you know, I do the same thing. I'm probably more up to date on the liberal viewpoint than some of the conservative stuff that I see. I mean, I look at all the liberal sites, and I try, you know, and I do question. There are things that I see on Mother Jones. There are things that I read on DU that I do question. And I go back to the conservatives, and I say, hey, what about this? And, you know.
And so you're right all the time?
Oh, no. Oh, of course not. I'm not right all the time.
Has Bush been right all the time on Iraq?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. We if we were going to go into Iraq, we should have gone in there to win and get it done and get it over with.
I agree.
Correct stuff.
I agree with that, but that's not the point. We never should have been there in the first place.
But if they're going to hide, you know, weapons caches and stuff underneath the hospital, well, I'm sorry, take the hospital out. I mean, that becomes a legitimate military target, and that's exactly what these terrorists know, and that's exactly what Hezbollah is doing over in Lebanon. They're putting all these little missiles, these Katyusha missiles, or rockets, underneath.
Who fired the first? Who? Okay, so they captured And don't you love the way they frame things? If the Israelis capture people, they capture them. But if the Hezbollah gets a hold of a couple of Israelis, they've been kidnapped.
Sure.
Yeah.
We can get hung up on the semantics.
No, let's forget that. Now we hear that we're not entirely sure that these two Israelis were caught in Israel. There's pretty good evidence to say that they were caught in Lebanon.
Yeah, I guess that's one of those things when you have to look at your sources and see who you trust.
All right, so that happened, and they want to trade them for some other hostages that the Israelis are holding. Who fired the first shots?
Well, I guess it just all depends on who you...
Oh, no, it doesn't depend. Everybody's clear on that. The Israelis who even tell you who fired the first shots. You see, the American public's got this drummed into them by the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and all that these Katyusha rockets came firing over the border after they took the two Israelis and they started firing. That's not what happened at all.
Did the Israelis give Hamas, or not Hamas, but Hezbollah a deadline and say, if you don't have it, have our guys turned over?
Yes, they did. Okay. And Hezbollah came right back and said, yeah, we'll trade them. And Israel refused. And that's a fight amongst them. I'm not saying either one of them's right on the situation, but what I'm saying is the right-wing media has got this painted like all of a sudden Hezbollah started firing rockets over into Israel, and the poor Israelis were just sitting there taking. That's not what happened at all. The Israelis were the first ones to fire artillery and rockets into.
And you know what? And I have no problem with that. They gave them a deadline, and then once the firing starts, then all of a sudden, and they're getting their butt kicked, that's when they want a ceasefire. You know, I mean, once the deadline is passed, it's kind of like your kid. You know, you use the example of somebody coming over knocking you in the mouth, and then you go over there and hitting them back, but you don't go over there and beat up the kids and their family. You know,
that's right.
You talk about that example, I can go right off of that analogy and go, you know, it's just like a kid. They're doing something you don't want them to do, and you say, if you don't have this, if you don't stop doing that, I'm going to spank you. Well, and you get off your couch, and you go over there to spank them, all of a sudden, they don't want to do it anymore. Well, it's too late at that point in order for the parent to maintain the respect of the child, that they mean what they say, they have to spank them. And it's no different here. The analogy might not be 100% applicable or whatever, but it's the same concept. You know, once the deadline's passed, you know.
So everything that anything Israel's been doing in this is okay with you?
No, because I don't know everything that's been going on. One of the things that I know that apparently is not the case that I've heard on several of the other liberal shows, like Tom Hartman or Malloy, is about the phosphorus, and that apparently is not the case. They have not used the phosphorus.
I had an expert on the program yesterday said he would not confirm that. That said he would not say it because he can't confirm it, and he's the kind of guy.
Right. But yet on some of the other shows, that's what's put out.
They have used cluster bombs.
Yeah, maybe they have.
They've used cluster bombs on residential areas, which is clearly against international law.
Well, that's all fine, well, and good, but then you're going to have to go back and tell. So here's the law. Well, you really shouldn't be in residential areas. I see that's the whole point with his law. You know, you can talk about the
Mike. You know, when you got an army that's got 500 and some a military, it's got 500 and some F-16s, and all the military might that they could. Tell me, why does Israel have all that?
Because you got 500 million against 5 million.
Ah,
that's why.
So you think if you and your family lived over in that area and you were Arabs, and you know, like it's like the Iraq situation. Yeah, we're there now. What are you going to do about it? Israel's there now. What are you going to do about it? Do you think that those people wouldn't harbor for the rest of their lives, having their farms taken away from them and all that?
Well, that's not what happened in Israel. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, the people who are Palestinians who want this separate state, they got kicked out of Jordan.
Do you know the difference between Hebrews and Jews?
I'm sure you're going to tell me.
No, I'm not. I think you ought to look it up. I think the Hebrews have a right to that land, some of it, to share it with the Arab people. and probably a lot of the Jews that are there do not.
Okay.
Look up the difference between Hebrews and Jews.
Use that logic. They won that. They were sitting there, and the Israelis got sanctioned to have their state, and that's where it was put.
Biggest mistake that ever happened in the history of the world.
Well, I don't know.
Biggest history. The Zionists thought maybe they ought to go to Uganda. They had a chance to have almost all of Uganda to themselves, and that's probably where they should have gone.
Well, but didn't these Palestinians, who where they're at now, didn't they have a place in Jordan in 1967 or whatever it was? Didn't they have that, and they got kicked out of there?
Have you seen where they were put? It's like we did to the American Indians. They gave them wasteland. That's what they've got now. Mike, I'd like to carry this on, but I can't. I've got a board full of callers here. I just can't believe that somebody should look at the Iraq situation right now and say that we need to stay there and we need to do this and that. I
just think we need to do it. I just think we need to go in to win and get it over.
But you think we should have gone in the first place? You're on record of that.
Yeah.
And what was the reason?
Me, personally, I think we should have gone in because of WMD. That would have been the primary reason. Because we didn't know where they had them or he did.
Let me tell you, we knew they didn't. I had experts on this show before that conflict ever took place that swore up and down that they did not have them and witnessed the destruction of them.
Well, but you're going to have people that's on the other side of the fence that's going to say just the opposite.
No, Mike, that's the thing. See, that's the thing, is that's just going in these circular arguments. Every point that the Bush administration came up with about these WMDs has been absolutely, unequivocally been proven wrong. Scott Ritter's been proven absolutely right. You don't have a leg to stand on that. Even Bush, look at him. He looks like a little pouting kid when you ask him about that, and he has to stand there and admit, well, no, we didn't find any weapons of mass destruction. Of course, Rick Santorum found him, though. Yeah. Hey, got to go. Thanks for your call.
Talk to you later.
Yeah. Oh, my. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg.
A couple quick comments about this. Your previous caller. First of all, I think you're wasting your time with these people. You could just go from here till the end of the earth, and they're just
That's
not
right.
going to turn around.
You're right.
You know, they're not interested in facts. They're going to have their own position and everything. But one thing I thought was interesting, he says, well, you know, look at Jordan, look at Egypt, and they have good deals with Israel. Well, part of the reason is they accept Jordan's right to exist. You know,
yes.
Everyone talks about all these Arab states won't support Israel's right to exist. Well, when will Israel support Palestine's right to exist? You know, when they pulled out of Gaza, everyone said, oh, it's great they're pulling out of Gaza. But you haven't heard any more about a Palestinian state now, have you?
Not a bit.
I mean, that idea is completely dried up, you know. So, you know, when you look at Jordan, Israel usually doesn't shoot rockets over there and you know, takes out six kids in the process. Usually they can't cross the border unless it's a very extreme circumstance. You know, Jordan is considered a separate country, a separate entity. The Jordanian people can move around as they want. You know, they can go to work. They can have a life. They can go to the doctor. You know, and all of these things. People have these ideas that, you know, well, if we just bomb out certain terrorists, then the situation's going to be fixed. No, you aggregate the situation 1,000 times. This is what I was talking to my Austrian friend about the other day. He says, well, you know, they're trying to, you know, get out these individual terrorists. I'm like, yeah, but for every Palestinian child that you kill, you aggravate the situation 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I agree.
And that's what I can never understand. If there's a suicide bombing in Israel, which I utterly, utterly condemn, you know, and an Israeli child dies, it's a murderous, monstrous act. But if Israel drops a bomb trying to get some terrorist leader and, you know, six Palestinian kids die, oh, it's collateral damage.
Right.
You know.
That's
and
right.
That's the hypocrisy. I mean, you know, and things like that, you know, these targeted assassinations, these incursions into the country, this failure to acknowledge the Palestinian state. And the other thing, too, is if you go into one of these settlements in the West Bank, you'll see, you know, Subway sandwich stores, an Ace Hardware store, and everything else. And then you have the Palestinian people there who don't want Israel there, who are starving to death. Now tell me that doesn't breed resentment.
Oh, absolutely it does. And I think, you know, Greg, I think a lot of people aren't aware of how brutally the Palestinian people have been treated and continue to be treated to this day. Like I said, the curfews and the checkpoints and all that, it's terrible the way they have to live.
And not just that, you know, and again, I'm in no way, shape, or form condoning suicide bombings. I think it's monstrous.
Certainly
murder
not.
And everything else. But from the perspective of people like the Palestinians, they say, look, we don't have an army. We don't have any way to respond whatsoever, whereas Israel has all of these weapons from the United States. So that's how they perceive it. They don't see it as, well, we're killing them innocent people. They're saying, we don't have an army with which to defend ourselves, and this is our way to defend ourselves. So that's part of the issue as well.
Yeah, you know, they don't want to recognize the fact that the reason Hezbollah even exists is because of the brutality in the past, and it's just breeding more and more and more of this. And, you know, the idea is now that a lot of the people are saying that, well, the Israelis, they're going to bomb the Lebanese people, and the Lebanese people are going to turn on Hezbollah. No, they're
not.
Yeah,
it's not going to work like that
no,
at all.
No, absolutely not. It's going the other way.
You know, and the last point I wanted to make, you know, we were talking about some earlier callers said, well, does the Republicans care about other places if there's not oil involved? And I want to give you an example. So the pet Republican cause is Iraq, right, to bring in democracy and all that. Let me ask you, and I bet you won't even have it on the tip of your tongue, what is the pet Democratic cause in terms of restoring democracy and freedom? I bet in another country.
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying.
Okay, well, so the Republicans say we have to go and intervene in another country to bring in freedom and all that, which is Iraq, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats have a similar message, but in another country. So what country is that? That is Sudan. Right now, there are, you know, over 2 million people in Sudan who are homeless. There have been, you know, hundreds and thousands of people murdered. But the Democrats are for that. They're saying we have to go in and do something about this human rights catastrophe, whereas the Bush government could care less. They say, we don't have time for that. We can't do anything.
And you're right. It wouldn't be a drop in the bucket, money and resources, as compared to what, you know, the Iraqi thing has been.
But there you have it staring in the face. And there's even Muslims involved. Republicans love to denigrate Muslims. Yeah. The Muslims are doing the genocide there in Sudan. But yet Bush and his people know we don't want to do it. So there you have the evidence right there. If you have a cause, you have people, to, you know, deprived of freedom, but you know, we don't want to do anything there.
Well, it goes back to what I talked about with the group last night that I spoke to. It's the ability to get your message out.
Yeah.
And the right wing has had an uncanny ability to get their message out and build that big broadcasting tower to the entire country, and we have not.
Yeah.
And it's nobody's fault but our own that we allowed them to, you know, to get such an advantage on us that way. It's fascinating to me that, you know, we heard Mike talk there a while. It's fascinating that he can put out those, quote, facts, and, you know, everybody knows they're wrong. And I'm not just saying people on the left. I mean, even people in the Bush administration will say that he's wrong. But
yeah. Well, because they're not interested in the facts. What they're interested in is that you could fool nine people out of ten usually with just a lot of innuendo, you know. Even if you're working at some office, oh, you know, I hear so and so's really dishonest, not I hear he steals equipment, this and that. You know, within a certain amount of time people are gonna believe
sure.
It's the same thing
sure.
Here. It's not about facts, it's all about image and presentation, you know. And the thing is, I think if you next week said, you know, I've been wrong, I think Bush is a great guy, and da-da-da-da-da. I think within about a month you'd get offers, oh, come back to the radio station and this and that, you know, because then you're putting your intelligence, but you're putting it behind all this crap. And then you'd be, you know, everybody would want you, you know, and that's the problem. It's hard to be on the side of justice. Think of yourself in line with people like, you know, Harriet Tubman and stuff like that, because right. It's always hard to be on the side of the right.
Well, you know, I thought it would be fun someday to come on. I'll just give this away. I really thought it would be fun someday just to sign on and start doing the show and say, you know, I've had it. I'm swinging. I'm going over to the other side and start off on some tirade against the left. I thought that'd really be fun someday.
You'd get calls like, oh, guy, thank God you've changed. And
yes.
People are so naive, they'd buy it in a minute.
Oh, they would. I.
Anyway, I know you got other calls, so I better run, but thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks for your call. Oh, man. Yeah, I've actually considered that. Now I've let the cat out of the bag. Yeah, just sign on someday and say, you know, I was thinking, I've been thinking, and I'm all wrong, and everything I have to say about my liberal views, I've been wrong, I apologize, and I'm going to be a righty from now on. Kind of like Ed Schultz, you know what I mean? and I do hope that gets back to him, I really do. He knows how I think about it. I've offended some people by saying that, I'm sure, but you know me, I really don't care. Hey, a couple of good calls there. You know, that Mike that called, I kind of know Mike a little bit. He sends me emails back and forth. And all the points that he made, I figured he would make. And they are the typical Bushbot. It's just hard for me to understand. It really is difficult for me to understand. Well, anyway. Hey, I'm going to take a quick break here. We got a couple of things that we got to do before the top of the hour, and we'll be back in just a minute.
And I hope that he heard me when I called from far behind him. I miss him every day that he was gone. But now I cry alone. I put on my bravest face and watched him off to war. My lover will be coming home no more. My lover will be coming home no more. And we were only children when we meet under the bleachers in a little town outside of San Antonio. But now join the Corps. My lover will be coming home no more. My lover will be coming home no more. And this house is like a ghost ship run aground. And I think I hear his voice in every sound. Sometimes
Oh, yeah. We're back. Only a few minutes left in the program. Do want to warn you ahead of time that come Monday, I'm going to give you a homework assignment, you see. That's why I'm warning you ahead of time. I should say come Tuesday. We're live every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday now. Come Tuesday, we're going to talk in depth and try and have some guests on as well. About this Rolling Stone article about Ahmad Shalabi and the horrible, horrible mess with Larry Franklin, Douglas Feith. That's a cesspool that I think America just doesn't have the facts on, and we're going to bring the facts out. That's going to be on Tuesday, so go to Rolling Stone. Check out that story about the Israeli connection and all that to the FBI. I think you'll find that very, very interesting. I'm telling you, I certainly did, and we're going to try and try our best to have a good guest on about that coming up on Tuesday. Been an interesting day, if nothing else. Get a call from a right winger. We don't get many of those, you know. Most of them, the interesting part is most of them nowadays don't want to talk to anybody. Have you noticed that? So I will give my credit. At least he would go on and state his views when most of them that used to call and used to email, they just won't talk about it anymore. And I guess I don't blame him a single bit. I wouldn't want to talk about it as well. So do keep that in mind. We'll have we will be here tomorrow. It'll be a repeat show tomorrow of today's program. And then Monday we'll have a repeat show. And well, we're going to be Tuesday. We're going to be live every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from now on, from 3 to 5 p.m. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 3 to 5 live. And don't forget, we're a listener-supported program. Do want you to remember that. We do thank you for being with us today. I appreciate your listenership. I did want to get into that Shalabee story today, but just didn't have time to do it. But we'll plan on doing at least half the show about it coming up on Tuesday. It's a fascinating, fascinating story, and we'll try and have some good interviews to go along with it. It's a story that needs to be told. All over America. Everybody needs to know this story. Hey, it's been good being with you today. As always, I do want to remind you, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good one, everybody.